With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. Speaking the truth with boldness and defending freedom and faith. This is the Owen Stevens Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Owen Stevens Show. We were just joined by William Kay. I absolutely love talking to that guy. It's such an honor to be able to talk to. I'm only 22 years old, everybody. Listen, I'm here learning along with you. So I have such a good time when I, you know, get to talk to people that are so educated that can teach me about these subjects because I love learning, guys. I didn't graduate from college yet. All right. So I've got to get that education under my belt. And I certainly do that every time William Kay is on. We are now joined by Tyler Nixon. I'm so excited to talk to him. He is a lawyer for President Trump's former campaign advisor, Roger Stone, said that he was questioned by the special counsel for the Robert Mueller office as part of the Justice Department's investigation into alleged Russian interference in the 2016 election, that sham. The Daily Caller reported that for Tyler Nixon. We're going to talk about more of that later, but really I want to introduce Tyler Nixon. Tyler, how are you doing today?
Good to be with you, Owen. I'm doing great, actually, and congratulations on your show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I want to ask you, so one of the things is Trump made this announcement earlier. We're going to get into Robert Mueller, lots of things to talk about, including Carrie Lake, because I want your opinion on her as well. But what was your reaction to Donald Trump announcing his run for 2024 fairly early on? What was your reaction? Did you watch it? What are your thoughts there?
I did watch it, and I've watched some of his recent rallies, and I have to tell you, this man has perfected that format, so let's just say that sort of presentation as well as Reagan did and Reagan's folks right. did back in the 1980s. You don't have a heart if you don't feel inspired by the end of any Trump rally. And you know, one thing I've absolutely noticed about Donald Trump, which is the trait of a true leader, is that he, unlike almost anybody that I've seen, particularly on the Democrat side, spends an almost inordinate amount of time, which is why his rallies go on so long, giving credit to and lifting up and giving spotlight to, you know, young rising Republican leaders, you know, the new generation coming forth. And that is so important. And it really does reflect a true leader, someone who can share the spotlight and showcase all, and he takes the time to go through everybody. Whenever he's, you watch the Arizona rally, he went and brought everybody up, gave them a chance to speak, and that's just excellent. I think it's great that he's announced because it drives the left crazy, and you know, the resides themselves, they had to appoint this bogus special counsel. Yet, what are we up to now?
Yeah,
I guess I don't know how many investigations, bogus
four special counsels. Yeah. Ridiculous.
Yeah, it's and it's an abuse just consistent with this. I've said before that Mitch McConnell, I have no use for. I do not believe he should ever again be Republican leader or any leader of any.
Yes.
If we take, well, they stole the Senate majority from us, obviously. But one thing that Mitch McConnell did that he should, you know, I give credit where credit's due, deserves, is he kept Merrick Garland off the Supreme Court of the United States. And that, can you imagine this ideological zealot and half a clown as a Supreme Court justice? I mean, I perish the thought. So at least he did that for the country. But as far as Trump's announcement, I think he had to do it because otherwise they would be hounding, you know, they're going to hound him into oblivion as long as he tries to have any right. place at the table or take any office. And really, I think this is a self-protective measure because it exposes, I think, just in technicolor, highlight the fact that why are they targeting him? Why is he so targeted? Why are they taking these picayune, ridiculous, nitpicky sort of investigations and charges and what have you, and going after him with such relish? And it's clear they want to deny him a return to the presidency and a return to the White House in 2024. And I think that what it does in terms of the larger movement is his announcement, his entry into the race exposes immediately proto or crypto never Trumpers that are out there, and who are frankly, in my opinion, quislings to our movement. Because, you know, whatever you think of Donald Trump, and I was talking to a good friend about this earlier today, is that when Trump entered the race, I was a Rand Paul, I was a Ron Paul guy, and I'm a Rand Paul guy, and absolutely love both those men, and think they are a national treasure, and have given so much in terms of, I think, moving the ball forward towards rolling back this fascist agenda that has been accelerated on the country. But he was in opposition to Rand, Donald Trump talked about, when he initially entered the race. And interestingly, I was working closely with Roger Stone, and we were sort of sketching out the basic outline of the Bush book that he wrote, The Bush Crime Family. And it was, we were down in Fort Lauderdale at his place. This is, I think, early 2015. And he kept getting interrupted by phone calls, and he would jump up and walk out of the room. And finally, I'm like, Roger, what's going on with this? I can't. He said, it's Trump. And Trump was just like burning the phone up, calling. And the thing is, I didn't know, you know, I really was, Trump was not what he is today. Obviously, he was, at that time, I knew him as the real estate developer and sort of a political dabbler, I guess, at the time. And I said, well, tell him we're working on a book, and you'll call him later. I just like went off, because it was, you know, seriously, I mean, Trump, when he gets on a tear, he'll be calling every, you know, every few minutes. But at the time, I remember writing a post, and I was just really critical of Trump on, I think it was Twitter or Facebook. And what happened was, as I started watching the debates, and look, I'm not some sort of zealot or hardcore ideologue or whatever have you. I'm not someone who cannot have my mind changed and cannot evolve and develop in my thinking. And in other words, it wasn't, oh, you know, never Trump, but like these people, it's all about ego. I think in their case, they just said something about them. I mean, Trump broke a lot of people's brains. Let's face it. I mean, I have friends who were rational, intelligent, and even thoughtful people that I've known for decades who just, they're apoplectic. They go insane when you bring up Trump, or worse, they're constantly on the warpath as far as Trump goes. So anyway, I watched the debate and the debates unfold. And even though, for example, he did insult Rand Paul, and he was a little bit, I think, you know, took the gloves off. But when he pushed back Megyn Kelly and just ripped into Rosie O'Donnell and did it with so smoothly and in a way that would, you couldn't, I felt the man was almost impervious to the type of character assassination that had been inflicted on so many good Republicans before. Yes. And I'm going to say this, he won me over. And that's, you know, that's where
he did that. The same is true, I believe, of Megyn Kelly in a lot of ways. One of the things that she said after that was that the respect that she had for him, you know, doubled. You know, everybody in that room, as a result of that and the way he handled that, how brilliantly he handled that, you know, with his sense of humor, which I think is one of the best things about him. You know, one of the things that people just don't understand about him. You know, this guy's from New York City. He's a New York City businessman, right? He's not going to be a nice guy. He's not going to be a nice guy. He doesn't have to be a nice guy. And I think that what he did was, yes, he broke a lot of people's brains because he didn't act like the conventional politician. And he's never going to do that. Well, you mentioned something earlier that I want to get into, which is the never Trumpers, because I think this is a problem, but I also think it's a problem flipped on its head. When you talk about never Trumpers, there's also always Trumpers, or, you know, forever Trumpers, people that, you know, as much criticism as Trump gets, there's also a group of people that are loyal 100% to this guy. And for good reason, because I think he governed very, very conservatively. I loved his policies, and he did a lot of great stuff. He did a lot of amazing things. But that's a problem, I think, to have a guy who, you know, such a large group of people will never criticize him, will never hold him accountable. And I don't think any publicly elected official should have that kind of base, should have that kind of, you know, forever support no matter what. I think that people need to be holding every single elected official, you know, holding their feet to the fire. That's one of the things that's, you know, that's the baseline for this republic. That's the baseline for America. If we can't do that with Trump, you know, that's a serious problem. Do you think that that's also a problem with these always Trumpers that refuse to criticize anything that he's ever done?
I think you're spot on in pointing this out. Here's the thing. The left operates almost as a cult, and they abide absolutely no apostasy and no deviation from the party line, the cult doctrine, whatever have you. Right. So, for example, an Obama would never, I mean, they would never abide. I mean, you were racist if you dared question the high holy Lord Obama. Now, I agree with you that there are people who are absolutely diehard and might appear to others to be, you know, sort of cultist Trumpers. But the bottom line is this, it's certainly not as much of a feature as you see on
I agree.
In the opposite quarters, number one. Number two, on the flip side of that, there are many people who are diehard supporters of Donald Trump and realize that, look, it comes down very much to a single choice. You know, we don't get to have half Trump. We don't get to have, you know, two thirds Trump. It's all or nothing in terms of you take the whole package, but are also equally, as Roger has been at times, very critical of Donald Trump's missteps. And one of those, a big one that's out there right now, is the death jab, the vaccine.
Yes.
That he is responsible for overseeing and for his obstinacy in not looking at the facts and the reality, which God bless Alex Jones and others have put it to him. And I think this is a real problem. But what is the alternative, I guess, ultimately? I think we need to hash that out over the next 18 months or so. But no, you're absolutely right. And I think it's but at least at minimum, we are aware of this. And I think even the people who might be considered always Trumpers are aware of their diehard support. But I don't think it is the main of our movement, of the Patriots. I think Patriots, by definition, almost are critical thinkers, something that's unfortunately sorely lacking and what we're losing. And thank God you're obviously a very aware and critical thinker and thoughtful person at your age. Whereas, unfortunately, your peers and younger are there's so many of them being horribly indoctrinated. Yeah, I don't.
So
I mean, I don't know what your upbringing is, your background, or your current situation. But obviously, you've been well educated and well raised, and you're ahead of you're more mature than your age. But dealing with your peers has to be very, very difficult at times, because they're not only indoctrinated, but they have been indoctrinated to be very aggressive against anybody who is, who strays from that, and to the point of Twitter level.
Oh my gosh.
Aggression and just nastiness. And it's that is frankly disturbing to me, because
yes, it is.
You're too young. These people are too young to be that overzealous and doctrinaire.
What it is I think you've pointed out a really good point. And with my peers right now, what I diagnose it as primarily is they have made these ideas, they have made this worldview their identity. And what we're dealing with right now for a lot of kids who lack fundamental things like religion, faith, community, those things, you know, before I was born, you know, some of the pillars of our society, you know, were churches, communities, faith, communal things that people did together, that friendships, going outside, seeing each other face to face instead of over the internet, instead of over your phone, over Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. Right, these things that have actually, you know, these social media platforms that were put in place to connect us better have actually served to do the exact opposite, separate us completely from one another, because it's much easier to text somebody something over Facebook than see them in person. And it's much easier to also text them something mean and hateful over Facebook than it is to do that same thing in person. But one of the things that they have done is that they have made this worldview their identity, because they don't have anything else to grasp. In everybody's heart, there's a God-shaped hole. There's a God-shaped hole in your heart, and you can only fill that with Jesus. I mean, I'm a born-again Christian, so I'm very outspoken about this. And regardless of whether you're a Christian or not, faith contributes enormously to how you feel about yourself, the identity that you have, you know, your worldview and who you believe you are. But these kids have been deprived of that. They've been deprived of who they are. They're told that they're told that the most important things about them are their skin color, their race, their sex. Those things are internal things that focus your attention on, you know, yourself. They make you narcissistic. You know, if all you're concerned about is your race, your ethnicity, your sex, your color, you know, if that's all you're concerned about, you're going to be a narcissistic person. because that identity, whenever it's attacked, right, they're attacking the most fundamental part of you. And that's why they're so angry. That's why they're so mad. That's what drives it. This, instead of focusing and finding your identity in something else that's better, like your character, your scholarship, your humanity, achievements, you know, your merit, things that you have worked hard to accomplish, your hard work ethic, the things that we used to take, you know, as, you know, the things that we used to value in this country. That's not what they're teaching kids to do. They're not teaching kids how to think or how to succeed. They're teaching them what to think, and they're teaching them to view sex and race and these things that are completely meaningless as the most important things about them.
Man, that is so well said. I mean, you couldn't have summed it up better, I don't think. And it's if we can just get a core of young leaders like you with those ethos and those principles, I think there's hope for the future. And I'm visiting with an Army buddy through Thanksgiving, and we were just a few minutes ago talking about what they've done to the Boy Scouts, because he was an Eagle Scout. And I thought, my God, you know, I was briefly a Boy Scout, but just what I gained in terms of information and yes. knowledge from that brief experience has still almost to this day still impacts my life.
Yeah.
And I really almost weep for how young people have been so victimized by these nothing short of evil monsters. I mean, they are diabolical, manipulative monsters. There's just no other way to say it. And to what they have done in terms of, and you're right about the social media platforming and the thirst for, well, first of all, tying your identity to it, but then also making attention seeking into an obsession almost. And their entire estimation of themselves comes down to likes and just this artificial world in which the worst sorts of impulses are amplified, and there's little restraint, and there's just, I mean, it is so warped and such a warped version of reality that you can't help but warp people's character and their development as citizens, as human beings, as family members. And the used a word that you very hear, I just said it very rarely hear these days, which needs to return, which is character. You know, it's like, I think they want to be characters, but they don't have character. And
they don't want good character. Exactly.
It's so essential. I mean, it's just the matter of being a good human being, and the absence of faith and the destruction of family. This, you know, you see what they're going after on the fascist, the totalitarian statists.
Yeah.
The education, sort of the minds, you know, they want to warp them and indoctrinate them. They can no longer, it's not a matter of they are, you know, thinking, they're not critically thinking. What they're doing is they're removing the ability to critically think, which is frightening, because this is people who will hew to their dogma no matter what. And facts, evidence, reality right in their faces doesn't matter anymore because of what they've seen or what they've heard or been has been drummed into their heads by extremists. And it has been a concerted effort. And what we have to do, I think we have to hope for, is that it's kind of like Mark Twain, I guess, it said that the truth's just getting its boots on when the lie is halfway around the world, is that we're always going to be a little bit behind in terms of propelling and counteracting this type of stuff. Parents are now waking up. I think you're going to see the destruction ultimately of the public schooling system. As people realize that we're not going to have our kids turned into mindless drones, into cult members in the most freakish and garish and grotesque sorts of ways under our noses. So I think you're going to see, if we cannot have parents getting in there and getting a hold of these boards of education and these different overseeing entities in these, particularly in the public schools, it's also in many private schools as well. But we it's going to take us a while to get there, but I think we always have principle on our side. We always have, I think, the intellectual firepower, as Sean Hannity likes to say, and he's absolutely correct. Since I was a young man, I've just realized that it all just makes sense when you're thinking along what would be conservative. And conservative is not an ideology. And this is a mistake. I think people, conservatism is a framework for ideology. It's a way of evaluating and differentiating what works, what doesn't, what's best for the preservation of culture, of a civil society, of a political comity where people can get along and where we can have a pluralistic society, not a democracy. This is another, manipulation that we see underway in terms of language and definitions. We are not a democracy. A democracy is just a mob rule by plus one. And, they actually try to push back on that and say I literally got into a Twitter exchange with someone who had said, "Oh, I love this latest talking point about being a constitutional republic." I'm like, "Where have you been?" I'm like, "You are woefully ignorant." I mean, I remember going back 30 years practically to the great George Carey, who was my mentor at Georgetown, who wrote Federalist: Design for a Constitutional Republic. He was the foremost authority on the Federalist Papers, and I commend you to you. Again, it's called The Federalist: Design for a Constitutional Republic. Dr. Carey was the most soft-spoken yet powerful professor and became my mentor. I took every course he had, in which one of them, he said, kept telling us, "Oh, I have a special guest coming in, a special guest. Don't forget to come in Wednesday for a special guest." I totally forgot about it and went to the class on the lesson. In walks Antonin Scalia and held court in that class for 90 minutes. And I actually asked him about gun control and whether the Supreme Court would ever take it up. And we can talk about that another time, but it was an interesting response. And ultimately, he turned out to be incorrect on that, because I think that everything shifted so quickly, as many things have, that I don't think, I don't think even Scalia, who was certainly aware of the wiles and the evils of the radical left, could see the acceleration that has taken place, say, in the last just even 15 to 20 years. But, we have the principles, we have the firepower. We need folks we need educators, and we need people willing to mentor and to show to young people that this is not how it has to be, that those instincts within you that are hostile and resistance to this, that want to be an individual, but want to be an individual through your distinction of accomplishment and achievement. And, liberty is something that enables you to not just be lascivious and licentious and, hedonistic, but to pursue virtue and to improve the world around you and to serve others. And that is the ultimate reward for this life, this material, physical, temporal life. You can't take it with you to the other side, and that, you will be judged by God, and that there is a God, and you will feel God's presence, and you will feel God's the universality of the Creator when you pursue these you pursue the exterior, the outer, not your inner satisfaction and being obsessed with narcissistic and these dysfunctions. I just hope that we can, it isn't embedded so deeply, because as Winston Churchill said again, if you're not liberal when you're young, you don't have a heart. But if you're not conservative and you're old, you don't have a brain, or something to that effect. I don't have a heart, because I've been conservative since I was literally a preteen. Because Ronald Reagan was president, and it was 1984, and it was just like it was such an amazing time. And it's crazy that year that George Orwell took and turned into the 1989, sort of the fictional year of the horrible authoritarian system, which we see wanting to emerge in our world, happened to be a year in which I saw Ronald Reagan, sort of the peak of American exceptionalism, which is not a myth, it's a reality. I mean, we do stand as this beacon of liberty in the world. And, I feel blessed that way. And, much has been given and much is expected, I think. And that should be, that should be the reality. So we just got to keep fighting. We cannot let this, requires blessing go.
I agree. It requires another thing that we need to point out to people, is that this is not an easy road. A lot of, fighting for your children's education right now in America will mean that you will have to take the consequences. You are going to have to bear serious consequences, real consequences on your livelihood, real consequences on your life, right? That's because that's what they're using against you. They're using your livelihood. They are using what's convenient against you. All right. Because in order to keep your kid in school, which is more convenient, then you have to accept what he's learning. In order to take this, you know, in order to take the vaccine or stay in your job, you've got to take the vaccine now because it's more convenient. You get to stay in your job. You get to keep your livelihood, but you have to get the vaccine. They're bullying people. They're bullying people using convenience and using people's livelihoods against them. So in order to really beat this, some of the time you have to bear the consequences. And a lot of people don't want to do that. Well, it's whether it's homeschooling your kid. What my mom did, as soon as the vaccine in New York State was required for kids in order to go to school, she removed every single one of my siblings from school. We were not equipped and unprepared for homeschool, but it didn't matter. It didn't matter because, you know, how convenient it was to send those kids to school did not outweigh how important it was to educate those kids in truth, in righteousness, and to keep them safe from a vaccine that could harm their health. And parents and communities need to weigh the cost of giving in to these policies. Is it worth giving in to these policies, or is it worth maybe bearing the consequence for what's truthfully good and right in your community and in your family? And those are things that not everybody is prepared to do, and that's the problem right here. Because if we see the power of movements and how, you know, a lot of people can get things done. What happened recently in Pennsylvania, there was the school district that ended up removing and recalling some of the school board members because parents had enough. They signed a petition. They said, this gender crap in our school has gone too far. You people are responsible for it, and you guys are going to pay the consequence. And they removed them. Those things are possible. They can happen, but it requires people to, you know, step into the fire a little bit, which with a lot of people are not capable or unwilling to do. And that's a serious problem. So we have to bear those consequences in order to stand up for what we, you know, actually believe, because liberty isn't free. Freedom is not free. You have to pay for it. It requires sacrifice. It always has. And Americans have not been conditioned to sacrifice what is required for freedom. We have not been conditioned to do that. You know, that's why you have the people in Normandy that stormed the beaches that were younger than me. Yeah, and that kind of character, that kind of spirit is not alive right now in the youth of America. It is dead. It is not alive right now. We do not have a generation of kids that would have been able to replicate what they did in 1945. We don't have that. And that's a true shame. The other thing that I want to ask you about is, you know, the role that fear plays. Because one of the things that I always say is a fearful populace is a subjugated populace. What they have done with COVID, what they're trying to do with the climate, what they're trying to do with, you know, a whole bunch of stuff is to get kids really afraid, get kids really scared. I think that's chiefly what the pandemic was meant to do. Get people scared, get them alone, get them, first of all, socially isolated, which contributes to, you know, with this overwhelming disease above their heads, what does that contribute to? A super high level of free-floating anxiety. So feeling anxious without not knowing why. And kids are especially susceptible to this because they don't know how to deal with that anxiety yet, right? They don't know how to properly deal with it. They don't have the proper perspective yet, you know, for their life. So they don't know how to deal with it. And those feelings are incredibly scary. And then that anxious feeling, those anxiety, those fears inside of kids contributes to frustration. Because you feel like that long enough without anybody around you, without a proper community, without a proper church, without proper social bonding, then you get super frustrated, which leads to violence. And then all of this in turn leads to a lack of meaning, and it leads to a lack of sense making, which is exactly why the liberals are winning. This is why they're doing so well, because they've managed to convince a lot of young kids, a lot of women that are single, a lot of women that don't like this Roe v. Wade abortion overturning policy. You know, they've convinced these people that, you know, the enemy is always Trump. The enemy are always these guys. They've mobilized their feelings. They've mobilized their anxiety. They've turned them into weapons for their movement. You know, and it's causing people to vote. It's working, and that's the real scary thing. What do you think of the role of fear right now, especially as it pertains to youth in our country?
Well, okay, you said a lot there, and all of it is spot on. And here, you know, Jefferson said the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. And I believe there's nothing harder than the easy life. You know, it's a really honestly, and yeah, and it's kind of like the old phrase. It's like, if you think healthcare is expensive now, wait until it's free. And reality always butts up yeah. against this. And they're absolutely, you know, fear-based mind control is all they've come down to. Because they've lost, it used to be the left offered all the goodies and incentives and freebies. And that gravy train is drying up because they're just patent thieves and fraud artists. So now they've resorted down to they're having to steal elections. So in one sense, I would have to disagree with you in the sense that they're having success. They're having Pyrrhic victories, maybe. But, you know, with each victory, quote victory, it's not only short term, but it's sealing their doom because people will not stand for being. I mean, it's one thing to disagree on policy. It's one thing to have programs enacted you don't necessarily. So another thing just to rob people of their franchise outright. There's one thing people really, everybody, no, any normal person, no matter what stripe you're, does not like being robbed, and it instinctively grates against their nature. And I think that the more they do this, the more they're converting people against their cause. That's why they're ultimately now moving into fear and chaos sort of based manipulation. And it's absolutely, it really does reflect the true nature of and the true degenerate, corrosive, despicable, frankly, nature of these manipulators, of these hardcore fascist types, whatever have you, is that they've resulted in engineering social panics and engineering broad-based fear just to maintain their position. I mean, that's when you're in the level you're into the level of satanic and frankly just outright evil people. I mean, there's no other way, no two ways about it. There's never a justification for ginning up fear and dividing people. I mean, they're into the realm of they've reached the bottom, I think. And as challenging as that is, and as frightening as it can be for us looking down, you know, staring into this, what seems to be very pervasive machine of diabolical influence, is the fact that number one, they've exposed themselves. Okay, so it's no longer this sort of like, you know, beneath the surface. We don't really know how, you know, they're subtly moving things. No, they're outright open now, so we can identify them, which was a problem before. You know, and people are going to have to choose their side, and it's not just a simple contrived adversarial thing. It's definitely the real battle. And the good versus evil, let's face it. So they've identified themselves and they're engaging in tactics that are anathema to any normal thinking human being. And I think courage is contagious. And courage is, if you've ever been in a situation where all it takes is really often one person to stand up and stick it back in the face of some idiocy that's being foisted on, and other people are emboldened by that. You know, we have logic and reason on our side. I mean, just explaining to people once that they're willing to listen for a minute, it's easy enough to sow the seeds of doubt because all their screeching and their squealing
emotional
and victimization professional victim playing doesn't mean squat when people realize that it's a fraud, or they realize they've been lied to, or they realize they've been robbed. I mean, and again, they're degenerating into tactics where people are just getting and also just getting exhausted of it and sick of it. So the question is, you know, do we have the strength? Can we garner the strength to overcome this while we're being subjected to it? And if you look at history and how human beings have arisen and mustered the courage, even just a small few percent who would lead the larger, the supermajority of people who don't want to live under the thumb of tyranny. I mean, who wants to live under tyranny? Who wants to live under a bunch of supercilious, antagonistic, pseudo intellectual control freaks? I don't see anybody jumping to the front of the line, that line. So, and I think there is in your generation that nascent desire, as much as it, you know, unfortunately, narcissism is not good. The impulse for individuality is definitely strong enough, I think, that there will be the ability. And I mentioned the being conservative when you're liberal when you're young, conservative when you're older, because I do believe that as much as they've been indoctrinated to some extent, that conditions and circumstances and realities, and in addition to a strong, firm, principled movement of which we have, which is lacking, has always been lacking in other countries, frankly, in other nations that have fallen, for example, China, that have fallen to the type of tyranny we see over there, which unfortunately is a cancer on this world. But we have here, I think, such a strong intellectual and committed movement of people who know the blessings that we were bequeathed by the founders, and this unique experiment, and that's been recognized as that. And there are people who are willing still to die to defend it and willing to put it on the line, even though it may not be as strong and endemic as it once was. It certainly is there, and I see it, and I know that it will grow. And I don't see people. Let's put it this way: I've seen plenty more converts to the cause of liberty and the cause of that. I have seen people saying, "Well, I'm not a libertarian anymore. I'm not a conservative anymore. I believe all this BS. Biden's God, and you know, no, it doesn't work that way. So we just have to be patient, and we have to know that we have God is our co-pilot in this journey and it also there is much redemption and much to be gained from struggle and from sacrifice, and you know, there's a sense of satisfaction to have known that what you won, what you've won, is real and was well earned, versus their thieving, despicable, you know, just manipulations and
vile. I agree.
Robbing every they really are just vile, evil. It's a palindrome, isn't it?
Tyler, we got to go to break real quick. We got to go to break real quick, but we will be right after with Tyler Nixon after a short break, everybody.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
More evidence that the Department of Justice under President Biden is little more than a political arm of the left. You might remember the case of Uruj Rahman, a lawyer who, along with another attorney, threw a Molotov cocktail into an NYPD cruiser during the 2020 George Floyd riots in New York City. The Trump administration wanted to use a domestic terrorism sentencing enhancement against them, which would have carried a maximum 10-year sentence. But according to the Washington Free Beacon, the Biden Justice Department dropped that, and the pair pleaded guilty to lesser charges. Rahman still faced up to 5 years in prison, but got just 15 months after the Biden Justice Department intervened on her behalf. The judge actually called Rahman a remarkable person who did a terrible thing one night, repeating the argument of her defense team. Prosecutors said both attorneys explicitly approved of violence and in text messages encouraged others to engage in violence. And the Biden DOJ went to bat for these low-life punks, shouted from the rooftops. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
In a news release from the 30th of March 2021, the World Health Organization announced that 25 heads of government and international agencies had issued a joint call for high-level political action to protect the world from future health crises. Ominously, world leaders said the international community should work together towards a new international treaty for pandemic preparedness and response, to build a more robust global health architecture that will protect future generations. There will be other pandemics and other major health emergencies. No single government or multilateral agency can address this threat alone, the leaders declared. The question is not if, but when. Together, we must be better prepared to predict, prevent, detect, assess, and effectively respond to pandemics in a highly coordinated fashion. The COVID-19 pandemic has been a stark and painful reminder that nobody is safe until everyone is safe. The Prime Ministers of Italy, United Kingdom, President of France, Chancellor of Germany, President of Ukraine were among the signatories.
The left want to control what people say and think. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Owen Stevens Show. I'm joined by Tyler Nixon. Tyler, this has been one of the better conversations that I've ever had. And you know, sometimes you sit down and you talk to somebody and you can tell that they truly love America. First, they truly know what they're talking about. They truly love America, and it's emotional for them. For me, it's an emotional thing because I look at this country, you know, and I was raised to love this country, to love what it stands for, you know, and to see so many kids who are deprived of that makes me just emotional. It makes me emotional that they don't know, that they're not really grateful. One of the things I always say is that gratitude is the mother of happiness and goodness. You cannot be happy and you cannot be good if you are not grateful. And what I see, you know, primarily from my generation, the kids in my grade, is a lack of gratitude for what they have, a lack of gratitude for how good they have it. And you can't be happy, you can't be good, you can't do good unto others if you're not grateful for what you have first. It's why America is the most generous country in the entire world, because we understood, we used to understand at least, that the responsibility to give, the responsibility to fix your community was yours. It wasn't the government's. It wasn't even the state government's in some cases. But that responsibility fell on you. It fell on the church to give. In the UK and places that they've instituted massive, you know, government overreach, people don't give. Because why would you give to a person when the government is going to do it for you? Why would you do that? You know, when they've made everything a right, when people feel like healthcare is a right, then why would you be thankful for it? Why would you be thankful for something that you're entitled to? And that's the problem with making everything an entitlement, with making everything something that you inherently deserve. You're never grateful for it. You're never thankful for it. We just had Thanksgiving. And it's so important to drive this point home to people that are listening that gratitude is the most beautiful human quality that you can possibly have. And, you know, inversely, ingratitude, being ungrateful, is the most ugly. What do you think of that spirit of Thanksgiving right now in America?
Oh, that's very well said. And it's, I think it's a point that's not as obvious and not, it's the flip side of entitlement is to be grateful and to be humble. To be grateful, you have to be humble and you have to recognize, you know, it's sort of count your blessings. And I think we, unfortunately, this is the, not the wages, but an unfortunate consequence of the fact that we have created the most free and prosperous civilization and human, human recorded human history, and freest as well. And still that's relative. I mean, still, we're still facing and dealing with a Leviathan state, populated by, if we want to talk about entitlement, my gosh, these people, honestly, the sense of entitlement, and it seems to grow with their youth. And on this,
it's crazy.
Again, it's an unfortunate aspect of being. It's almost like fat and sassy because you're so pampered and you don't have to face any of the real challenges of life. And you know, this may be a consequence of this attempts to create scarcity and deny people. I think they think that their people are going to go to mother government somehow, and that'll solve all. And that's been the entitlement, welfare state. Well, unfortunately, we're a welfare warfare state, really. And that's been what's been pushing our national governments, you know, the people who run it, it's keep the people. You know, it was the same thing with, frankly, the Nazis, guns and butter. We can have both, you know.
Yes.
No, you can't. You cannot. And I think if there's going to be any consequence of, and I really hope it isn't visited on us in a sense, because who wants to go through these deprivations? Who wants to have to see our society and our economy go into reverse and to be right. People less well off, less healthy, poorer in the long run, for this generation, for the first time in eons of this nation's development. But at the same time, I think it may be sort of the splash of cold water in the face of this emerging
generation. Wake up call.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. I mean,
I think that's going to happen.
Yeah. I hope really it isn't so corrosive that we lose our essence and become, more savage in nature, but I don't think so. I see the generosity of everyday American citizens, day. I mean, you know, you see, of course, where it bleeds, it leads kind of thing. You're always going to see the vicious savagery, and unfortunately it's proliferation in a society in which, we have these lawless, zealots in charge who are just some of the worst criminals. I mean, they're I said, the Democrats are no longer a party. It's the Democrat crime syndicate. And that's just the way it is. But I think at the same time, it's to harken back to my namesake and distant relatives, how he coined the phrase, the silent majority. It's true. It exists. And you see it every day in how people go about their business and they hunker down and support their families. And there's so many more of those people who are under-recognized than there are, frankly, of the agents of chaos.
For those people, this needs to be a point that we drive home, because yes, I do think, and it is true, you're right, that there is a silent majority. That's true. But I don't think that that's necessarily a good thing. I think that one of the things that I've done—
Well, we need to become the loud majority.
I know, exactly. We don't have, one of the things I've said a lot is that we don't demonstrate rage enough. When somebody calls you racist, no, I'm serious. When somebody calls you racist, when somebody calls you transphobic or unjustly labels you, unjustly does these things to you, and we're supposed to just take it on the chin, where is the rage from people? Where is the rage? How dare you call me that? You know, right. How dare you say that to me? You know, these are unjust things. And what we've done, what's become of us is we've been conditioned by these labels. We've been conditioned by these attacks. Many conservatives believe that their opinions are inherently offensive, even though they're not. Simply saying what they believe is offensive to people. So what will they do? They'll be quiet about it. They'll believe it in silence, right? But that's not true belief. That's not truly what we should be doing. If somebody goes around, you know, and this is why it's such a problem, because if we are not outspoken, if we do not, you know, put pressure where the pressure needs to be, kids are going to pay. They are going to pay the consequence. They are going to bear the consequence. We see that happening right now where kids are not safe in public schools. Why? Because parents trusted these school officials for too long, and now it's run amok. It's a monster that's out of control. And now parents, I agree that they're waking up, but it's not enough yet. It's not enough yet. It needs to be, and I think it will be in the future. You know, growing and getting better, but people need to demonstrate rage and anger over these things. This is not normal. Do not, you know, don't let yourself be conditioned to believe that being told, you know, that you know, a kid is a man that wants to be a woman. Don't allow them to condition you. Don't allow them to tell you that, you know, kids can be women and men can be women and women can be men. Don't allow them to say that. That is preposterous. That is outrageous. And for them to teach that to your kids in school is offensive. It is absolutely ridiculous. And it's a spit in your face. It's a slap in the face to your intelligence. They're insulting your intelligence. That's to me the biggest sadness, is that a lot of conservatives are not going to show that rage. And that's a problem. And they need to show that anger. I think that's one of the only ways that we get out of some of this, is angry grassroots people that are fed up. That's one of the reasons that Trump won. People that are fed up, and they say definitively no. The most powerful word in the English language, which is no.
Well, you're a wise young man, Owen, I must say, beyond your years, and it's refreshing to hear this, and you're very articulate. I would put a finer point on what you're saying, because I totally agree with you. Not so much rage, but outrage. And that's really outrage. What it is. I mean, rage is sort of just an unharness, but outrage is what we need to. And outrage. When you have outrage, become outspoken, yes. As you said. And that's what we need, is people to. And I'm a person who's went through the Clinton years, I worked for Newt Gingrich. I've done all these and been sort of beating this drum to anybody who'd listened for decades that. Look, these people are we need to stop them, or it's going to get worse and worse and worse. And it's kind of like. It's cold comfort to know that what I've been saying all along has been mostly correct. And it's actually in some ways worse than I even thought. But that being said, one thing I learned early on, and I don't know where I got it. I guess it was just the sort of righteousness of knowing that you're right. And it's like, I don't say that with any ego. You know what I mean? It's more like I've been blessed with knowledge and with an understanding of things. And I thank God for blessing me with this, you know, I'm humbled with it. And I think the case with many people who understand. And like I said, my mentor, Professor Carey, one of the most humble, just gentle human beings, just a great man, yet so powerful what he had to share. He would never get his hackles up, but I think it's, you know, there's a time for, there's a season for the peace and for being humble, but then there's a time to fight. And now is the time to fight, I think, because these people are putting it all out there and they are really, you know, pedal to the metal as far as trying to absolutely degenerate and collapse our culture and enslave us and destroy, you know, everything about childhood and everything about humanity, frankly. And yes, and I would say anger is not it's never a good thing, but it can be a useful thing. And it needs to be channeled, and you need to take your outrage, you need to direct it into action. And I said, talking to my friends earlier, it's time to step up. And I mean, they live in Wyoming, so it's not, you know, I was patting them on the back for getting rid of Liz Cheney, that just despicable
Wench.
Imposter.
Yeah.
And yeah, just horrible human being. I mean, just a really, I mean, she couldn't have, I mean, Dick Cheney couldn't have had more of a mini me in that wench. That being said, you know, yeah, it's time for, and we see it actually a little bit in California. Look at how they've adapted and stepped up and took some seats.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, whoa, California.
Yeah.
It's such a
New
a
York as well.
It's gone. Yeah. And so there's a lot of hope to be seen. We're just getting started. We've just begun to fight.
Yes.
And I think let's not get despairing and let's not let them, like you said, see what they're doing and not stay silent. And, you know, here's the thing is also like, I don't think it's a matter of, I think it's almost like we're laughing at when you're called a racist. Yes, it was once a horrible thing to be called, but they've gutted the term. It has no meaning
yeah,
anymore.
It has
it's
no meaning anymore. Even, yeah.
It's not effective. And that's really,
yeah.
Let them burn off all their phony, vituperation and burn off all their powder on that kind of thing. And then we'll step in. And we'll step yeah. up and step in and,
you said
and
something
show
really
everyone
important.
The reality of it. You know, it,
you
deeds,
said
not words, as my my basic infantry training company was that was our motto: deeds, not words.
Yeah, I mean,
something
you said something
by.
Really important about despair. You know, despair is the enemy of action, and that's one of the things that a lot of people are doing, especially when they see you know what happened in the midterms, what happened. Listen, these are long-term things. They don't resolve over one election cycle. You know, the lie is that this election's the most important election of our lifetime. Really, they've been saying that for the last 30 years. They've been saying that every 2 years for the last 30 years. Give me a break. It takes a long time to rid ourselves of these swamp creatures. I want to ask you a really important question before we close, which is,
man,
you know,
I almost think you were reading my mind or something, Owen. I swear, I just said this. I said it took 100 years of progressive policy, and I said we're not going to solve this overnight. It may take 100 years to get back the republic in order.
Exactly.
So
yeah, that's true, and it's worth every single year. Every that time, it's worth it, dude, guys. Freedom is worth that amount of time. All right, because we went through all of human history. That it took a long time to get to America. It took a long time for these Enlightenment ideas to be solidified. It took a long time for that to happen.
Yep.
There's a reason it took a long time, because they work. They are incredibly refined, and they're being attacked right now. I want to ask you, we were talking about gratitude before we close the show, you know, and not to go on a tangent, but I want to ask, you know, what do you love most about America?
Oh, wow. Where do I begin? I think, right. I think ultimately, as I alluded earlier, I think the fundamental kindness and generosity, godliness of the main of people in this country, where you find you find charity, you find no matter what, and when there's natural disasters, people pull together, and you see that
compassion,
spirit. Yes, and love. God is love, and I think in what you see in the American people is a basic sense of humanity and love for others selflessness that you really, I think, lack in so many other, but I think ultimately it is a human trait. I just think it's really pronounced here. People are so generous in this country. And I think no matter what sort of crises we might face or even are foisted on us, if they think they're going to degenerate us into some like zombie apocalypse, they can forget it, because the people will pull together and help each other, not be tearing each other's throats out. That's for the left
to
do
to
each other, and that they can ride that horse to hell.
Leftism and Marxism are things that appeal to the desires of the flesh. They appeal to the desires of the flesh, but Americanism, impulses of the flesh, Americanism and liberty, what it does is it actually checks our human nature, because liberty is not free. And one of the things, it's not an idea. Liberty is a value. Liberty is a value. Humans do not naturally desire to be free. We naturally desire to be taken care of. Liberty is a value. We fight for it because we know that it is hard, but it's better in the end. And our human nature says, no, just let the government do it for me. It's easier. It's easier to let the government do it for me, to let these people give me what I want, to give me that paycheck in the mail, that stimulus check. It feels great. It's better that way. You know, but liberty is a value. And knowing that that is not how it's supposed to go, you know, that's really what's under attack. It's not, you know, it's not human nature to want to be free. It really isn't. It's a value that we have. And that's what I think one of the most important things that I could say about America. Tyler, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. I want to have you on as much as possible. You're very good at talking. That's one of the, that's such a difficult skill to master, which is to learn how to orate, to have, you know, good orator skills, to be, you know, Abraham Lincoln was perhaps the best. And I think that it's just an honor to talk to you. I want to give you a chance to tell everybody what you're doing next, give everybody a little snapshot of your upcoming, you know, endeavors, and then where they can reach you personally and find you so you can stay connected with our guests here on TNT.
Well, I appreciate that. And Owen, I want to say, right, you know, reflect that praise and gratitude right back to you. I thank you for doing what you're doing. And I hope you have a long, successful career as a persuasive, right-thinking and godly individual. And I see a bright future ahead
thank
for you,
you.
As someone who's going to change this world for the better. And thank you for that. It gives me hope.
Absolutely.
I'm sort of in a state of flux. Things are so politically, I'm still working constantly with Roger and branching out into some different projects, but they're a little too still in the larval stages, I guess you could say, to make any announcements or anything like that. But you can find me on Twitter at Real Tyler Nixon. I'm also on Gab at Tyler Nixon, and I try to keep up with the social media stuff. And you can pretty much reach me through there, and you'll catch me on InfoWars on occasion and on other shows and as well. So,
well, Tyler, we gotta go.